Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Born Yesterday, a podcast experiment in which myself and Andy Barr...
Yes, hello.
...have been cloning ourselves, haven't we, Andy?
Yes, you are 100% right. We have been cloning ourselves and we have given those clones 24 hours in which to familiarise themselves with three things from the totality of human experience.
And then we ask special comedian guests to explain other things to them on the basis that they only understand those original three things. They're expanding their knowledge base.
Absolutely, Alexander, that's fully correct.
The three things in this episode are...
An urn.
A waiter.
And Top Gear.
Andy.
Yes. How
do you feel about cremation? How do you feel about being left in an urn?
Well, for a long time, I was fairly adamant that I wanted to be. I was quite a precocious little teen, and I was like, well, I want to be buried, and I want all of my nutrients to go towards a tree. I've come around in the later years towards the idea of cremation. My dad always said that he wanted to be shot into space.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that wasn't related to his death, though. That was a, thing he used to say.
Get me out of here.
He used to say that mainly at bedtimes.
Well, and when the vacuuming, needed to be done, that sort of thing.
There's very few other objects that are mainly used for beverages and human remains.
Or decorative purposes. Ode to a Grecian urn, I believe, is a Keats poem upon viewing a Grecian urn with dirty pictures of boys fucking on it. Or men and boys.
Because it's a Greek urn.
Well, I think that was just one of the things that they decorated their urns with.
Yes.
Yeah. Before nipping off for a lovely bread with some delicious meat in it. And a third Greek thing.
Yes. If I...
Demis Roussos.
If I do pass away and I'm placed inside...
Aphrodite's... Was it Aphrodite's child or... I can't remember. Whatever group Demis Roussos was in.
I don't know. You're asking the wrong man.
Ah, well, I'll look it up in a bit.
Anyway.
Yeah.
When I died, like a sort of higher class of grot on my...
Yeah.
...gravesite.
Furries?
Yeah, maybe some sploshing. Maybe a sort of...
Sploshing.
Sploshing is when you sort of fucking cakes and things like that.
Right, okay.
So I'd like a sort of illustration of that on my tomb.
Do you recall...
Because I don't want to be cremated, I want to be...
You want to be buried. Well, you want to be interred in some sort of monument.
Interred in a monument, right, yeah. Okay. What I'm aiming for, Andy, is I want my burial situation...
Elaborate funereal compound.
Absolutely, to be as much of a problem for subsequent generations as possible. Ideally, I'd like to be buried sat up.
Right, yes.
Possibly, you know, made radioactive in some way, so right. People are less likely to burgle my grave.
Yes, because you want to be buried with all of the valuable things which we can see around us in your room.
For listeners, there is nothing of value currently in view.
There's a Dell laptop.
Which barely works.
If, but you don't tell them that. You might want to sell it to one of them at some point. Pay for next year's podcast hosting.
Yeah, I want to be a corpse. I don't want to be ash.
So you want to be embalmed to an extent. Or perhaps we could sort of Damien Hirst you and get you in the formaldehyde.
Well, a thing I know about graveyards, Andy, is that foxes love graveyards.
Right.
And they love human bones.
Right.
And most graveyards in London especially, but all over the UK, foxes burrow into our graves and they sharpen their teeth on our bones after we're dead.
Fucking sick.
And I actually find that quite comforting.
That's great. That's really, really good. To be of use.
I'd quite like to sort of be of use to
right, so you
the
do want
world.
To rot.
Yeah.
Right, okay, because when you said a corpse, I thought you meant sort of a preserved... Like,
yes.
Not quite the Jeremy Bentham auto icon.
Yes,
but,
I wouldn't hate that.
Right, okay.
But what I really want to be is a skeleton.
Right, yeah, okay.
That's what I want.
Yeah.
I want to ideally be buried sat up in a chair holding an item of interest to teenagers so they burgle my grave and in a Goonies-esque escapade...
So these days, probably a phone.
Probably a vape.
Bury me
with a large container of vape juice so teenagers try and burgle my grave.
Yeah.
Of course, we'll all be buried with vape juice in the future.
Mm. Why?
Because it'll have sunk into our bones.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Turned us all...
Sort of ambiently consume it anyway, don't you?
Why are all these skeletons these days cherry pink? Well... Turns out that's a
vape juice.
Something
crazy happened in the 2020s.
The morgue start to smell of bubblegum. Mm.
As the vape juice. That would be an improvement. I don't know how much... I mean, you'd assume that lots of measures are taken within morgues to prevent the stench unless the mortician likes it.
But
maybe they do.
But I don't think that... I don't think that pivoting from that to going, we need to make this... morgue smell as delicious as possible. I don't think that's necessarily an angle that they want to go for either.
I would prefer it to
smell
sweet to the fucking magic tree or whatever that you get in your car.
You know, sometimes where you smell a soap and it smells really good and you want to eat it even though you know it's soap.
No.
Have you never had that experience?
No.
That's a relatively common experience.
For you.
This
man's never met a soap he doesn't want to eat.
But what I'm saying is that you don't want to pump delicious smells into a morgue because a mortician working a lengthy shift, he's got popcorn on the brain.
Well, you know, I'm not going to pump the smell of a delicious rack of ribs in, just freshly baked bread. So not the smell of food.
Okay.
Like a pine freshness or a sort of gentle lemon zest. Although that is a food, technically, I guess, but it's more of a, nobody goes, oh, I want to eat a lemon. They go, I'd like lemon to augment the flavours of something else.
I mean, possibly because I've never been in a morgue, Andy.
Surprise.
But given how many cleaning products are used, there probably is some lemon zest knocking around
And some pine freshness.
And some pine freshness.
So as I suggested, they probably do already take a number of measures to address this issue.
So when people talk about the stench of death,
what
they actually mean is a lovely zesty lime.
Yeah, in certain quarters. Have you ever been served by a waiter?
Yes, Andy.
Well, you do surprise me, sir.
What's the worst service you've ever had?
I've never really had anything that's particularly stuck out to me, to be honest.
Mm.
Sometimes it's taken a while. Mostly it's when it takes a while. That's
Yeah.
That's the extent of it.
I was once in Edinburgh with my friend Dan Cardwell, and we went to a cafe. He ordered, they got his order wrong. They asked him to order it again, and he said, "I'd like this without bacon." And the guy serving him said, "Oh, for God's sake." Do you prefer attentive waiters or wait staff? Or people who just let you get on with it?
I prefer people who just let you get on. I prefer those who have kind of, you know, half an eye on whether you're trying to sort of meekly do the gesture for "I have a question or a requirement," but do not come, you know, because I think the pet peeve for people, certainly myself, is when you've just taken a huge mouthful of whatever you have, because you have to eat greedily if you're a previously quite diminutive man like
yourself. If you're a greedy little boy.
No, if you just need to, you know, you're the runt of the litter. You've got to absolutely get as much of it as you can in one go.
Oh, you're the youngest, aren't you?
Yeah. So in order to, you know, grow up to be a big, strong boy, you've got to really, really fucking go in hard. And yes. Also, I don't like, if I'm having a hot meal, I don't like it cold.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
So I don't want it to go cold. I want to ensure that I've had all of it whilst it's warm. So when I'm having my first couple of mouthfuls, you bet they're fucking mouthfuls.
Yeah.
And then this fucking...
That's always when they come over.
Yeah.
You enjoying yourself?
How is it?
Hey?
Yeah.
Oh.
Absolutely fantastic, thank you, is what I'm trying to say.
But I can't.
No.
Because my mouth's full of the food you've just served me.
It absolutely is.
Oh. Men and women are different as well, aren't they?
Yeah, you know. You know it. This guy knows. It's crazy how different they are.
Do you, like I, Andy?
Yes.
Take...
of course I do.
That's good to know. It's not what I was fishing for.
But, well, you've got it.
But I wasn't ever really sure until you just confirmed it.
Yeah.
I very much judge people by how they treat service staff.
Oh, definitely, for sure.
I actually made a decision to stop. I stopped seeing one of my friends because of how they treated a waiter in a restaurant.
Mm.
And I challenged them on the behaviour, and they said, "I don't know, I can't help it."
Well, that's the... that's a questionable impulse.
And this is a person who was very concerned with ethics and fairness.
Right.
And,
you
know, class structure and things like that.
A blind spot. Or maybe so that they could afford so much, you know, goodwill to everybody else. They had to have just one category of people in society that they would be an absolute cunt to.
Yeah. So if you're listening, that's why we don't talk anymore.
Well, probably aren't listening.
No, I should imagine not.
But if they are, if you could rate us 5 stars on Spotify and provide a review.
Speaking of people who treat people who bring them food badly.
Well.
Top Gear, Andy.
This is alchemy.
I'm of an age.
Yeah, I know. We all are.
Where... growing up in the UK, Top Gear was appointment viewing.
Yeah, for a lot of people, yeah.
And the combination of a sort of loud, tall, rude one.
A crotchety man.
A crotchety
feminine man with long hair.
And a sort of...
diminutive.
A sort of upbeat little boy.
Yeah.
Was absolute... catnip to the great British public.
Oh, 100%.
And it's interesting, Andy, because I don't know if you've been watching many YouTubers recently.
Well, you might not know, but I think you could hazard a guess.
I don't know if you're a fan of the Sidemen or Mr. Beast.
I'm familiar with Mr. Beast.
I know you're obsessed with Mr. Beast.
Yeah.
YouTuber content is basically just Top Gear.
Yeah.
It's all the same visual language, the same sorts of things that they're doing. And I find it very interesting that this kind of incredibly modern sort of content medium of being a YouTuber, the kind of highest end of it is just copying basically a mainstream BBC show.
Yeah.
And that, this might seem like an incredibly specific thing to bring up, but I think it is weird.
Well, clearly an extra grind, so...
Yeah.
So grind away.
I think it's weird.
Yeah.
I think it's weird that YouTubers have basically complete creative freedom and they just want to make Top Gear.
Yeah, well, you know, it's... I mean, we were discussing in one of the previous episodes how a lot of evolutionary paths lead back to crabs. I think this is a similar thing. Like, maybe there is only one perfect mode of content creation, and that is to have some men drive a car around or undertake some sort of challenge where they all have, you know, three personalities that have a lot in common but one sort of difference that they can then kind of riff off.
There's banter.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you look at most of the, you know, even the biggest entertainment properties over the past couple of decades, at their heart, they're all basically Top Gear.
Yeah.
Iron Man.
With Robert Downey Jr.
He's a sort of caustic older man.
Yeah.
He's playing with fast cars. He's building toys. It's basically Top Gear.
Yeah. Well, you know, that and Scrap Heap Challenge.
Yes, it is sort of high-end Scrap Heap Challenge for another program that younger listeners won't be aware of. Crichton from Red Dwarf had a show in which you had to build ships out of things in a jump card.
Yeah, a jump card.
A junkyard. It was a sort of precursor to some of the stuff they did on Top Gear.
Yeah.
An Iron Man is that plus Top Gear.
Yeah.
The Avengers...
I mean, you've seemed to be sticking to Marvel properties.
Oh, it's just these are the higher end.
Right.
But other stuff as well, you know.
Yeah, such as?
Marriage Story. In which Scarlett Johansson is a sort of James May-esque figure.
Yes, yeah, and Adam Driver is...
Yes.
Clarkson.
And
the third character who's in Marriage Story.
the
plot of which is that they are married and Driver punches a wall.
What I'm saying, Andy, is
a meme.
Is that all things are Top Gear.
Right. Yes. I understand.
And
I understand that that's what you're saying.
And I want to propose this. There's many prisms through which we look at film.
Yeah.
The
name three prisms.
The three-act structure, right. The Bechdel test.
Oh, right, okay.
And, you know, linear or non-linear narrative structure.
Yeah.
And I propose that a new way of analysing cinema is to go, how is it Top Gear?
Right, okay. And is this confirming its Top Gear-iness? A positive, or are you saying that every single thing is Top Gear, and the core to understanding its essence is understanding the way in which it is Top Gear?
It's about understanding function, Andy. I don't think most ways of analysing culture or film should be loaded with a sort of positive or negative thing. It's about analysing how something works. Just throw a film at me and I'll tell you how it's Top Gear.
The Werkmeister Harmonies.
Okay, I've never seen it.
Oh, it's great.
Okay. What's the film I have seen? I'll tell you, it's got Top Gear.
What would you have seen?
Brace yourself, everybody, for one of Andy's famous digs.
Okay. Before Sunset.
Who's in that?
Ethan Hawke.
Oh, there's your Clarkson figure.
Right, okay. Yep. I believe there's a French actress in it as well.
Okay. That's good.
Ethan Hawke, anyway.
All the Mission Impossible films.
Right, yeah.
They're all Top Gear.
Who is John Voight's character in Mission Impossible 1?
Richard Hammond.
Right. So Ethan Hunt is Clarkson. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Right.
confusingly.
Who's right?
Because of the statures involved.
Yeah. And who's May? In Mission Impossible 1.
Who's the woman in Mission Impossible 1?
I mean, this is displaying something of a blind spot here, given that we have only been able to name Scarlett Johansson in the last 4 or so films.
But all, and it's not just high budget stuff. As you know, we were talking about content, more serious. You know, the best example in the cinema of this at the moment is Zone of Interest.
Yes, of course. So Rudolf Hess, Clarkson, or
I think the trio are analogous to a lot of the characters that we see in the film,
right?
And their sort of glibness in the face of unseen horrors,
yeah.
Is really
and in films where I mean, this is
who was the Stig in the Holocaust?
Well, I was just one of the trains. Aren't
Our two guests in this episode are Heidi Regan and Johnny White. Really, really,
you can find Heidi Regan on Twitter at Heidi_Regan. She does a podcast about film, indeed, with Stuart Laws and Nathan Darcy Roberts. You can, so she should be well equipped to answer the question of who the Stig is in any given film. She has a number of other things going on, which you should check out.
And you can find Johnny White Really Really at Johnny W Really times 2 on Twitter. Johnny is a fantastic comedian. Johnny's doing dates at the Soho Theatre at the 5th and 6th of April. Please do get along to that. We rate both Heidi and Johnny very highly as stand-up comedians.
Wonderful friends.
You can also get tickets to my shows at the Soho Theatre on the 29th and 30th of April. The earlier you buy, the cheaper they are.
And you can see me in perhaps Leamington Spa or Reading in the forthcoming weeks, or you can just come and see me. It's probably possible to figure out where I am by triangulating my presence between my various different forms of social media.
Shall we listen to the episode?
Please.
Heidi Regan and Johnny White, Really, Really. Thank you very much for agreeing to explain a few things to us today.
No worries.
It's all right.
Thank you so much.
In the 24 hours that myself and Andy have been alive, we've come to learn something of the following 3 things.
An urn.
We know what a waiter is.
And we are familiar with Top Gear.
These okay. 3 things we have an understanding of.
Okay, can I, at this point, Just to clarify, what is an urn? Yeah. Oh, it's when they put ashes in.
Yeah.
Okay. Or sort of, you know, drinks and things, like, you know.
Is it always ceramic? No, when this is...
It's a ceramic container that may have ash or liquid or anything really in it.
Okay, cool.
And I'm so glad that you've asked us because that is literally one of the 3 things that we know about.
Okay, cool.
Right. It's exciting for us to get to be the authority figures here.
Oh, nice.
Heidi. Bearing in mind that we know what an urn is, we know what a waiter is, and we know what Top Gear is, in 1 minute, I would like you to explain to us both who Jeremy Kyle is.
Oh, God.
Your time starts now.
So I think he is a human, like on Top Gear. On Top Gear, the 3 people are humans.
Yes.
The people are humans.
Clarkson, Hammond and May.
Yep. Yep. And he has a talk show for people.
What's a talk show?
It's where people say silly things and he's trying to... I could have the wrong person, but I think he's trying...
What's a silly thing to say?
A silly thing to say would be like that you go on to talk about your family situation and you think it's just a bit of drama, but he's making it out like you're a horrible
What's
human.
A family situation?
So on Top Gear, they're like a family because
Clarkson, Hammond and May.
Yeah, like he would be the daddy.
Who's the daddy on Top Gear?
Jeremy Clarkson's
May, the daddy.
May is the mummy.
What aspects of Clarkson and May mark them out as the
daddy and the mummy? Clarkson is a bit of a grump, like a
grump.
Dad.
Thank you.
Thank you, Heidi. In a minute, you've told us that Jeremy Kyle is someone who has a talk show. And what a talk show is it's where you go to talk about your family. And a family is a bit like the Top Gear guys.
Yeah, there's a relationship. There's a mummy and a daddy in the family, and the daddy is the grump. And mummy's characteristics are as yet unknown to us.
But talking about it is silly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, Heidi.
Thank you so much. Johnny.
Okay.
In 1 minute, could you please describe to us who Hannah Montana is?
Okay,
your time starts now.
All right, so you know we were speaking about families.
Yes.
Earlier.
Mummies and daddies.
But maybe this is not relevant. But it doesn't matter who her dad is because you don't know who she is. So let's get down to the basics first.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, so you see a waiter.
Right.
Yes. They shimmy about restaurants, right?
Yes.
Would you describe it as shimmying?
Well, when I'm waiting, let me tell you, I'm shimmying.
What's shimmying?
Shimmying is when you sort of, it's more like it's walking but in a jaunty way. They kind of in and out.
Right. It's walking in and out.
Yeah,
of the restaurant.
Not of the restaurant. The roundabout, like between tables, artful walking.
That's right. It. That seems okay. Like an inefficient way of being a waiter.
But that's what they do. That's where they get the big. But well, they get the tips for that, I suppose. But
what's a tip?
A tip is extra money. Money's like you can put. So an urn contains things of value normally.
Right.
Right.
But imagine that if it contained, well, you don't know what money is. That's the whole, so.
So money is something that you could put in an urn.
You could put in an urn easily.
Thank you. Okay.
Thanks, Johnny.
So am I to read from the direction that you were going that Hannah Montana has something in common with a shimmying waiter?
Yes.
Okay, so Hannah Montana is somebody who, like a waiter, shimmies in and out between tables in order to fill
an urn
with something of value.
Thank you, Johnny. That's extremely useful.
Thank you.
Those are two people that we've learned about. We'd like to know about some places. Heidi, in 2 minutes... please explain to us what a roller disco is. Your time starts now.
Okay, so you know how waiters shimmy?
Yes.
Well, sometimes...
Well, Hannah Montana shimmies in
like
a manner
waiter.
Like a waiter.
Waiterly.
And so...
She's an inefficient waiter.
Yes. And so sometimes, for fun, people will shimmy on shoes that have wheels on them that then make them go really fast around an area.
And is this in order to fill up their urns?
No, there's no urns involved.
What's a wheel?
A wheel is one of the earliest inventions.
I think we're familiar with them from Top Gear.
Oh, yeah, it's what
things,
goes on the
things,
cars.
The things on the bottom of the cars.
Yeah, so these
that
are
Jeremy's
much smaller
friends
things.
Sit on.
The mummy and daddy.
Ride around on.
So mummy and daddy take their family to the roller disco where they put on the shoes.
Hammond.
They take Hammond to the roller disco.
And it's shoes with wheels on.
Shoes with tiny little wheels on. And then they shimmy around in circles and everyone's doing it. And it makes you go really fast like the cars in Top Gear.
Is there not a worry that they might crash into the tables?
No, there's no tables. It's just an empty space that they empty floor, where you'd put a car on a runway.
Right.
In Top Gear.
So is the aim to see how fast?
Yes, it's
the
like basically
Hammond
the humans
can go.
Are little cars on wheels.
So Hammond, Clarkson, and May become the cars. Are you a car if you have wheels? Do you become a car?
In a way, yes.
What way?
In a metaphorical way.
What's a metaphor?
I knew you'd ask that. A metaphor is when you say something, but it's not really that, but it kind of symbolizes that. Like when I say that Hammond is, that May is like a mummy. He's not actually a mummy.
Right.
But we'd come to understand that he was the mummy.
Yeah, but that's because metaphors are very hard to learn on day one of existence.
Okay.
Right. So you got your work cut out for you then, haven't you? Thank you.
Thank you. In 2 minutes, you've explained to us that a roller disco is a place where you go with your family to become cars.
Like cars. They've cleared all the tables out so that everyone can go as fast as they can.
You see how fast your Hammond can go.
But nobody's urn is being filled by this motion. Johnny.
Hello.
In 2 minutes, could you please describe to us what Dubai is?
Okay.
Time starts now.
All right. So you see the roller discos. Do you remember it? From just now?
Yeah, from just now.
Okay, so...
Yeah.
Do you know how big, do you know what scale is? Okay, I'll give you an example of scale. So you see on Top Gear,
yes.
The cars are sometimes smaller ones and sometimes bigger ones, but they're roughly the same thing, but made bigger. Mm.
Well, we understand that there's some sort of differential between Hammond and Clarkson.
Yeah, okay. So that's a good example of scale. So they're both basically the same basic person, but just one's bigger, right?
Right, yeah.
So Dubai, imagine
one of them's a daddy and one of them's a family.
Yeah,
but one of them, otherwise they're the same.
That's true, but there's a relationship of scale between them,
right?
What I'm proposing is, you see the roller disco from just now, okay, think of that. So let's talk scale. That's yay big, which means it's a set size that I don't know.
Right.
A size that you don't know is a yay.
Yeah.
Who sets it?
It's sort of set by nature, I think.
What's nature?
It's a sort of impartial force that governs life. Put it like that.
Right.
Beautiful.
Okay. If it's an impartial force, why is it setting limitations on the size of a roller disco?
It's not for us to wonder why. But so if you think of Dubai,
right,
roller disco, a bigger version.
It's like the Clarkson to the Hammond of a roller disco.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's talk urns, right?
Okay.
So if you think of Hammond and Clarkson, times it by 2, times it by 10, times it by 100, and then put those in an urn, and the urn is on a bigger scale.
So it's a really big urn.
And there's loads of huge urns.
And they've
all the way up to the sky almost.
Packed in
and
there.
They're full of these families of these
Have
people.
They been burnt in order to get
them
in there?
Well, not families, but I want to say, I mean just people. Do you know what I mean? Because do you know what I mean by lots of people?
Clarkson, Hammond and May.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Thank you, Johnny. Andy, would you like to sum up what we've learned about Dubai?
So nature, an impartial arbiter of size, has decreed that somewhere there is to be an enormous roller disco. Within this roller disco, there are urns of varying sizes, but all of them vast enough to contain many, many, many Hammonds, Clarksons and Mays, regardless of their sizes.
I forgot about waiters. Sorry.
Would you care to augment your explanation with a waiter?
And there's waiters there as well.
Okay.
Thank you.
I think that's captured it all.
That was extremely useful. Thank you.
Thank you.
One area of human experience we're particularly keen to learn about is the world of art.
Art.
And creativity. Heidi, in 3 minutes, I would like you to explain what happens in the film Fight Club. Your 3 minutes start now.
So there's a guy in it. Some of them work as waiters, and they're sad about life because
they're not shimmying.
They're not shimmying, or if they are shimmying, they're doing it because they think they have to, not because they want to. And they are,
why are they sad about life?
They're sad because.
And what is sad?
Well, they're sad because it's the 90s and they think they've got problems.
What are the 90s?
The 90s is years before now.
And
do
a
you
year,
know what years
no.
Are? So a year is time. You know how on Top Gear, when they go round a lap, they time it?
Yes.
Right.
So a year is like many, 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 many laps.
It's a lot of laps.
Yeah.
The
time of that.
Scaled up.
Scaled up. Yeah. Yes. You know, yeah, scale. So this was back before, just before Top Gear even existed. And they were sad about life. And so to fix that, they started fight.
Were they sad because Top Gear didn't exist?
In a way, yes. I think Top Gear probably gave them the joy that would have given them the joy that they had to get instead from making a Fight Club.
So waiters now are shimmying with a sense of purpose because Top Gear exists.
Kind of. Do you remember Metaphors?
We scratched the surface.
Top Gear is a metaphor for that need to be unleash their inner masculinity again that they thought they needed in the 90s.
Okay, I've got three questions.
Okay.
The first is, what's sad?
Yep. Sad is, you know, Top Gear.
Yeah.
When they crash a car, when they meant to not crash a car,
Hammond,
they would feel emotion there that would make them feel like, like I wish it had happened otherwise.
Okay.
Right. So sadness is when you would prefer a car to still be on the road.
Yeah. Or when you have an urn full of ashes and you wish it was actually not, and it was a
full
person.
Of money.
Full of mummy or daddy.
Right. So sadness is when your car stops when you don't want it to.
Or there's ash
yeah, when
in your
it
urn.
Crashes.
Is joy the inverse of that?
Yeah, joy would be, the epitome of joy would be when a car goes the fastest you want it ever could go.
Okay. And what's releasing your inner masculinity?
Releasing your inner masculinity is being full Clarkson. You know, Clarkson is the real extreme daddy.
Yes, the grumpiest of the
He's the grumpiest.
The available
and then
men.
Being so grumpy, you punch someone and make a fight club.
Being full.
Being full of Clarkson.
How do you fill up with the extreme daddy?
You fill up with extreme daddy by just punch. He's punched people.
Thank
I'm
you.
Sure.
Thank you, thanks. Heidi.
Thank you very
it's a
much.
Great film.
So Fight Club is set in the 90s.
A specific part of the 90s.
A specific part of the 90s, pre-Top Gear, where everyone was sad.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So they were all constantly crashing their cars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then something happened, presumably, something happens in Fight Club, presumably the invention of Top Gear.
Mm.
And then they stop crashing their cars because they're able to punch people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
It's like the back of the DVD.
It's a DVD.
Is that a question?
Yep.
It is. Oh, God.
Yep. Okay. Thank you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Johnny.
Hello.
In 3 minutes, could you please describe to us what happens or what is the song "Life on Mars" by David Bowie? Your 3 minutes start now.
Okay, so do you remember we were talking about roller discos?
Yes. Everybody's trying to go as fast as they can.
Everyone's trying to go as fast as they can, but okay. Let me just.
Is
say
that
this.
How they become sad? Is they find out how fast they can go and then crash?
That's one way of becoming sad.
Okay.
So is becoming sadness is discovering one's limits,
or just crashing your car's limits.
Right. Carry on, Johnny.
So you see Fight Club. Remember that we were talking about Fight Club. Yeah. Do you know what a film is?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember?
Not exactly.
Okay, so it's like if you think of the contents of an urn, but imagine it to be sort of colourful. You throw it.
Colourful ash.
24 times a second against the wall. And it creates an image that moves and simulates moving, like in when they move between different cars and different kiosks.
Is that 24 urns per second, or does the urn refill with ash and you're throwing the same?
It's probably easier to have 24 urns per second.
Right. And
but 24, you need 24 people to chuck it against the wall.
Right, okay, so it's not arm.
Or you don't do that it like that. But that's a good way of doing it.
That's one way in which a film could be created.
Yeah, and then it creates an image that looks... So say that Top Gear, they're moving around.
And is that the manner in which Fight Club was created, or did they have a different method?
Well, they probably created it several different methods at once and then just picked the best one afterwards, so I'm not really sure. But that could have been one of them. It's definitely on the table.
Okay.
How do you see Hammond crashing in the ash?
Well, you have to. It's represented as such, and then you have. He didn't really crash, though, did he? Did he really crash?
Yeah,
this is news to me. I think that in that case, you just. It's like a picture. You know what a picture is? On cards, they have colourful illustrations like pictures of sunsets and musical notes and stuff.
What sort of cars?
Nice, cool ones.
Good cars.
So that's a picture. Right. So that it creates these dust on the wall. Yeah. It creates.
If you looked at 24 of those in a second, would it be a film?
Yeah. Basically, yeah.
Okay. I mean, and that would inspire joy because the cars would be going very fast. And then there's one
of those films. Have you seen Clockwork Orange? Well, you don't know, but there's one called Clockwork Orange.
Right. Okay.
Who's David Bowie?
Oh, David Bowie. Oh, yeah. Okay. So he had different coloured eyes. The same as no one in Top Gear. Does that make sense?
His eyes were different to the Top Gear men's eyes.
Yeah, they've got regimented eyes.
Brilliant, thanks.
Andy, would you like to sum up what we've learned about Life on Mars by David Bowie?
Well, let's start from the basics. The Top Gear men, Hammond, Clarkson and May, their eyes are all the same colour. David Bowie's eyes were different colours.
Mm. And if you throw multicoloured ash from an urn...
Yeah.
Perhaps the ash is multicoloured because that ash was once David Bowie.
Maybe.
Because of his different coloured eyes.
Could be. I mean, it does pigmentation... transfer into ash in very specific circumstances?
I don't know.
No.
But if you throw...
Probably, yeah.
Probably, okay, great.
But if you throw 24 urns against the wall, you can watch Fight Club.
Yeah. And a song is something.
Thank you, Johnny.
Thank you.
Myself and Andy are aware... Other things happened before we happened.
Oh, I forgot waiters again.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if the explanation doesn't require waiters, you don't have to include
them. No, I don't think so, actually. Oh, no. No, it doesn't. No.
Okay. But do bear waiters in mind.
Yeah.
God, they're way heavy on my mind.
Yeah, I keep forgetting all... I'm going to write down all three and have it in view.
Heidi.
Yeah?
In 2 minutes, could you please explain to us the London 2012 Olympic opening ceremony? Your time starts now.
Okay, so there was Olympic Games, which
What's
are
that?
Where lots of people, like the people on Top Gear, okay. they get together Families. And they compete. Like, you know, on Top Gear when they race cars.
Yes.
So they're trying to see how fast the cars can go.
Yeah.
Without getting sad.
Yeah. and if you do the fastest, you're happy.
Right.
And
yep.
so the happiest.
The fastest without crashing.
Without crashing. Mm. So the happiest you can be in that. Arena is to
so there's sort of like a there's like a tension between how happy you could get and how sad you could potentially be.
Oh my god, you've just summed up sport.
What sport?
So sport is when you're doing Top Gear.
You're doing
without
Top Gear.
Doing it for television.
So sort of unseen Top Gear.
Unseen Top Gear, unless
why can't anyone
it's
see
seen
it?
Sport. Okay, there's also sport, there's scene. And that is called the Olympics.
Right.
And what is the unobserved sport called?
That's called exercise.
Right, okay. What is troubling me here is the impression that I have that happiness is a sort of sliding scale, but there is then a binary switch to sadness the second the car crashes.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's the risk you take.
Okay. Once you crash, are you sad immediately, or are you still happy for a bit, and then sadness washes over you?
No, you're sad immediately, and then you think what you've learnt from the crash, and you slowly get happy again.
And what's a ceremony?
A ceremony is where people are kind of doing, you know, shimmying waders.
Yes.
Okay. So Hannah they're Montana. Doing lots of things like shimmying and dancing to celebrate the fact that they're about to do sport like Top Gear.
Not for tips?
No tips. Okay. They're doing it just to celebrate. Some of them would be paid by in tips, I guess.
And London?
London. Oh, London is, you remember Dubai?
Thank yep. you. Your it's time is up. So... the London 2012 Olympic opening ceremony took place in London, which is comparable to a massive roller disco. It was a ceremony.
Yes.
To celebrate the fact that lots of people unseen may or may not have been about to crash.
I'd say so.
And nobody was getting tips for it.
Some people were getting tips for it.
Okay. London's like Dubai. Johnny.
Hello.
In 2 minutes, could you please describe to us or explain to us the establishment of the Silk Road? Your time starts now.
Okay, so you see waiters.
Yes, we're aware of them.
Do you remember we were saying about them shimmying?
Yes.
Mm. What about sashaying? You heard that word?
No, how does it...
Similar, very similar.
Right.
Almost indistinguishable.
Okay, but it is distinguishable.
It's more artful. So
it's more art... What is artful?
Artful means being sneaky in a good way. So what I'm proposing to you is... So there's a thing called the internet. The internet, in fact.
What's that?
That's a big collection of, if you imagine urns filled with information, they're connected invisibly. You can visit them, but you don't go to them. You just visit them in your mind. That's basically what it is.
Mind urns.
Yeah.
And okay. They're all connected.
And, yeah. And you are the waiter sashaying between them, shimmying almost.
And
shimmering for
if,
sure.
If artfulness is being sneaky in a good way, what's being sneaky in a bad way?
Like if you kicked over someone's urn without telling them you did it.
But if you telegraphed that you were going to do this beforehand, then that would be fine.
That'd be all right. Okay. People probably would value that. People love honesty.
People love being told their urns are basically not to.
Urns, the mind urns, the internet, there's one that you can only get to if you use a certain type of browser. Is this the sort of Silk Road we're talking about?
What's a browser?
The one we, do you know, are we talking about the where you buy drugs?
We were born yesterday, we don't know.
Oh, right, okay. Oh, wait, do you mean... I thought you meant...
We're looking for an explanation of the historical event, the creation of the Silk Road.
I've got no idea. I thought you meant...
I was so impressed you knew what the details, and then I was like, oh, wow, it's got the internet.
What's drugs?
Drugs, you see, remember about feeling sad?
Yeah, it's when you crash.
So when you feel like that, drug is... imagine an urn full of dust... Pour it down the old gullet.
Thanks.
Andy, would you like to sum up what we've learned about the creation of the Silk Road?
Certainly. So, in order to address the issue of feeling sad, a number of mind urns were connected, but in an artfully sneaky way, so that they could only be accessed via a certain kind of browser.
They could be sashayed between.
Mm. But this was artful because somebody, you were informed that these urns were going to be there and that they were about to be kicked over beforehand.
Yes.
And there's dust in them.
And if you drink the dust,
if
it makes
you
happy.
If you pour it down the gullet, you get happy.
After you've crashed.
Yeah.
Thank you, Johnny.
Thank you, Johnny. Thank you.
There are so many things to learn about.
Oh, so many.
We'd like to learn about some more. Heidi, in 2 minutes, could you please explain to us what a moist cake is? The time starts now.
So you know waiters.
Yes.
They bring
sashaying, shimmying.
And you know how they bring food to people?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the function of a waiter. Yes. Yeah. We do know that.
So one of the foods they bring is cake.
What's that?
So cake is a sweet tasting thing. You know, waiters bring sour and sweet tasting food. Would you know that?
Well, what's the difference between sour and sweet tasting food?
Sweet tastes really good. Sour is a waste of your time.
Right.
But you can't have too much sweet.
So good is happy and sour is sad.
Yeah. Good is like,
why would
driving really fast, so, and sour is like crashing your car.
After you've had too many happy bits of food, yeah, is the waiter obligated to bring you one sad bit to balance out the experience?
He's not, but society
or does he,
makes...
does he do it out of some perniciousness?
Society makes you think you should have more sour. Because
right, so nature does not actually set any limits on this.
Nature sets limits by the fact that if you have too much sour, you will inhibit bits of your body.
Which bits?
I guess just look. If you ate nothing but cake, look. I have to say this.
We are at least once.
cake. Right?
Yeah.
It's sweet. It's sweet.
Happy.
It's very happy.
Sour is crashing.
Sad. It's crashing.
You said that society thinks we should have more sour things. What is society and why does it think we should eat sour
things? Society wants to self-replicate.
Like cloning?
Yes.
Like we're clones?
Like you're clones.
Are we
so
sour?
If we... too much.
Would you describe us as crashing?
No, I would describe you as if we ate too much sweet, we wouldn't. I don't
Thank
know.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I confused myself.
What we've learned there is that a moist cake is a thing a waiter brings you.
Yes.
To help you experience the sensation of not crashing.
Mm.
But society thinks you should crash more often.
Yeah. And there's a limit on the number of sweet cakes that the waiter is allowed to bring you before he has to bring you.
And that limitation is placed by nature.
No, society.
Society.
Nature has no such rules.
Thank you, Heidi.
Johnny, please.
Hello.
In 2 minutes, could you explain to us what a rabbit is? Your time starts now.
A rabbit?
A rabbit. Mm.
Is that what you said?
A rabbit. Yeah.
Okay, so you see when we were talking earlier about... So let's... Well, we'll take it right back to waiters.
Okay.
So you...
Sashaying, shimmying, yeah. Filling up their urns.
Now, there's a certain amount of sashaying that they do on the flat land. So, because of the nature of having to hold things. So we, you know...
The terrain affects
tables. You know, they're walking through tables, not through tables, in the gaps between tables.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. That's three tables in the way, because if you say through trees, it's really the gaps between
what
trees.
What are trees?
So it doesn't matter.
What are trees? What are trees?
Okay, trees, they're pointed like this. Oh, it doesn't matter. No, so V-shapes upside down. Do you know what a V-shape is?
No.
Like the front of a dart. But no, but
what's
that's
a dart?
Well, I thought maybe they would play darts on Top Gear. I don't know.
We're not familiar with the entirety of
okay,
it.
Okay,
know
green.
What it is.
Remember we're talking about nature being an impartial force.
Right.
But part of nature is greenery.
Right.
Sorry, yeah. My voice went funny for a sec.
It's okay.
That's okay.
One of the big elements of this greenery are trees. They point towards the sky.
Right.
They smell sweet in the rain. They're nice. You walk amongst them if you're lucky.
They smell.
If you're not lucky, you never see
them. They smell sweet in the rain. Do they smell sour in other weather conditions?
In other weather conditions, the less said about them, the better, quite frankly.
Ooh. So when it's not raining, trees
don't go
smell
near
like
them.
A crash car.
Sometimes, yeah. Right. Well, it depends where you are.
You say they're pointing.
Yeah.
They're pointing towards
the sky.
You
said the darts are pointy.
Darts are pointy, yeah. So,
what is a dart?
Darts, they're made of feathers, but not all of them are.
What's a feather?
Feathers, they bedeck birds. They're bird is an animal.
Be a bird.
Like, so they're like waiters, but they're not on the ground. This takes me back to the first point.
Right, okay.
On the flat land.
Yeah. And in 4 seconds, a rabbit is?
A waiter on other than flat land.
Right.
Can I say I missed what the word was at the start, and I was really trying to see if I could figure it out.
It was a rabbit. Oh. And a rabbit is, we're unclear as to whether a waiter is limited to flat land.
Yes.
Or if a waiter were to move into different sort of rougher, more rugged terrain, they would become a rabbit? Or
yes.
if a rabbit is simply a waiter that occupies flat land, hilly land?
And birds are waiters that cannot touch the ground.
That's true.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Is yeah.
It? Okay, great. It's always nice to have arrived at
it's always good to have something
a
true
universal
said.
Truth.
We would like to know more about the things people do. Heidi, in 2 minutes, could you please explain to us what we would be doing were we to impersonate a police officer?
So waiters
yes.
have
yes.
authority in a restaurant.
What does that mean?
It means that they tell you what to do to a degree. There are rules.
I think that the opposite is true. And the waiters is one of the only things that we know about. I would say that you tell a waiter what to get you.
Well, no.
No,
no, because we've already established yeah. that the waiter is prohibited from bringing you too many sweet things in a row. They have to bring you something sour. So there is clearly another authority at work.
So there are two authorities acting on
society.
Waiters.
Yes.
Well, nature as well.
And
to an
society.
Extent.
Well, no, nature affects its authority over your body, where if you have too many sour things, it will make one bit of your body not work.
But I still think it is untrue to say that waiters tell you what to do.
Well, I'm sorry. Have you ever walked into... I
no.
know you haven't.
No.
Yeah. So if you were to go into a restaurant and say to a waiter, I would like to drop my trousers here right now, he would have the authority to say we have a rule against that, you are leaving.
So that's a rule that's some an authority
above
the waiter.
Oh,
has.
Well, that's a good point, because you could say policemen are the waiters of society.
Do they sachet or shimmy?
Sachet, I guess.
And what are trousers?
Trousers are things that Top Gear they wear on their legs.
What are the sweet...
Mummy wears trousers.
All yeah, mummy and daddy and child.
What are the sweet things in society that the policemen are trying to stop you having too many of?
Oh, well, bloody freedom.
What is freedom?
Freedom is the ability to walk into a restaurant and drop your trousers without any rules.
And what
but I thought that was the waiter's jurisdiction to prevent you from doing that.
Well, it's also, they would, if it got out of hand, they would call a policeman.
And what does impersonating mean?
It means pretending.
So is that what's a waiter's doing, presumably?
It's pretending you are the policeman. It would
Thank
be
you,
like...
Heidi, your time is up. In 2 minutes, you've explained that what I would be doing were I to impersonate a police officer is I would be pretending to be a kind of a waiter called a policeman whose main concern is stopping people having too many sweet things.
And freedom.
And freedom and dropping their trousers.
Yes.
So I would pretend to
people
be...
People want to drop their trousers.
I would pretend to be a waiter in order to stop people having freedom and dropping their trousers.
Essentially.
Thank you, Harry.
I'm glad that we've got to the essence of that.
Can I tell a brief anecdote about the trousers?
Please.
Please.
I know someone in Bristol who got turned away from Bristol Rock City because the bouncer looked like a sack of shit, and as he was walking away, his trousers fell down. Anyway, that might not be relevant. Well,
that feels very relevant.
Perhaps one day we'll have the context to understand that.
I want to have that as my catchphrase at dinner parties.
Didn't get that either.
Johnny.
Yeah.
For the love of God, whatever that is. In there. 2 minutes, could you please describe to us what we would be doing were we to pour salt on a slug? Your time starts now.
Okay, so oftentimes, don't use that word that often, but I thought I'd try it out. It looks better written down than said out loud. I'm sorry that I said it. But often, the reason why urns get filled up is because people say, for example, you remember like Top Gear?
Yes.
Yes.
You see Top Gear. So those people, the family at the end of their lives, that's their time on the flatland and the other flatland when they're governed by nature. Do you understand? When that comes to an end, they expire, that they die. So die is like a car crashing.
Whose
right?
dominion do they come under after that?
Well, that's up to them, or at least it's not up to me, and I don't know. I hope it's someone.
Would you care to speculate?
No.
Okay.
So after you crash, you die.
No, but nature, that's you become under the ultimate dominion of nature then, I think.
Okay,
I worry.
So you're no longer under society's
No, but I wish you were. I wish heaven was real. Anyway.
So the police stop telling you what to do after you've crashed.
Absolutely. And it's the final
then
crash.
Then it's nature's call.
Then it's nature's call. And then, see, those people, the body, that's their physical form.
The ultimate sour.
But society thinks more people should crash.
Yeah.
Society wants more people to be dead.
Well, of course, it needs a turnover of the population in order to perpetuate itself.
How does that work?
Well, I'm not really sure. But I know that it doesn't necessarily want people to expire, but it definitely wants new people to develop. And the only way that can really happen is for other people to expire.
What's a slug?
A slug, they're like little snakes that live in the kitchen.
And a snake. there's a couple of terms I'd like defined there, but your time's up. Thank you.
Thank you, Terry. Andy, what have you learned about pouring salt on slugs?
So in order for society to continue to exert control over itself, it requires a turnover of mummies and daddies.
They must become sour.
They must become sour. The ultimate crash must occur, and the police wash their hands of the whole thing and say, this is nature's lookout now. A similar thing can happen to a little snake that lives in your kitchen. Neither of those terms have been defined.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Myself and Andy have use of the English language, but not a full understanding of it. Heidi, in 2 minutes, I would like you to explain what the following collection of words means. Mm-hmm. Enough room to swing a cat. What would I mean if I said that? Your time starts now.
It would mean that an urn is very small space.
Not if you're in Dubai.
Yeah, not in Dubai.
Yeah, so if you went from living inside an urn to living in Dubai.
Do people live in the urns? I thought it was a roller disco situation.
Ashes live in the urn. So if you
ashes,
if you
were to give, ashes live in urns.
If you were to give the ash more space, would it become a person again?
No, it would stay ash.
Right.
But if you, it's but still that ash, if it could talk, which it can't, but if it could, and you moved it from that urn
this
to
Dubai. This is speculation
Dubai,
on your part, surely.
It's probably, yeah. But if you
so it's alive, but it can't talk.
No, it's dead. But if
you said it was alive,
I did not.
You did.
We're at an impasse. Okay, say something else is in that urn,
and such as
a small, small Top Gear man.
Which one?
Let's Hammond start with Hammond.
Hammond is the smallest Top Gear man.
He's, let's say
one,
he's even smaller.
It's difficult to imagine that the other two are small.
In an urn. And then you take him from that urn to Dubai, which, as we know, is a much bigger urn.
So he takes up less. He's still in an urn, but he's taking up less space within that urn.
He's now in a much bigger urn. And yeah, so he takes up less space. And he looks around and he says, oh, you could swing a cat in here. And what he means is, I didn't have space in the urn to spin this creature.
So he's got it there.
It's and now in Dubai he has that space.
No, but the creature.
Yeah.
Did he always have the creature?
He it's another metaphor.
And is that a drive that has always been within him that he wants to?
I would think probably it's always been there a little
what
bit.
What sort of creature
him.
Is a cat?
A cat is a slug. Oh, like a bird. So birds are waiters in the sky.
Right.
Yes.
Cats and
slugs
are waiters
snakes in the kitchen.
On the ground. They're little rabbits.
They live on sort of uneven terrain, I think.
Yeah, yeah. They can, but they can never fly like birds.
And a cat is?
It's a slug of the
thank you.
Ground.
Heidi, your time is up.
So the ground and the kitchen are separate realms.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what I would mean, if I said enough room to swing a cat, is that I would have taken a Richard Hammond from a tiny urn and put him in Dubai.
Yeah.
And he would have thought to himself, oh, I could move a sort of slug called a cat in here.
Yeah. Which he couldn't do in the urn.
Right.
Thank you.
So this is a realisation of a sort of dream of his.
Yeah, it's excitement.
Okay.
It's happy crash.
Happy
non-crash.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Johnny.
Hello.
What would I mean were I to say somebody sang like a canary? Your time starts now.
Okay, so do you remember when we were talking about birds?
Waiters that cannot touch the
waiters
ground.
Waiters that cannot touch the ground, much as waiters do. So do you know what waiters do?
Yes, they bring you food.
Okay.
Bring you food. And they've got a set of rules.
Okay, so sometimes...
And there's a couple of different forces being exerted on them. The police, your order,
they really are
nature.
In a grey area as far as...
Sometimes they
perhaps
say...
Perhaps that's why they move around so much, is that there's so many forces acting on them.
True.
That they feel the need to Hannah Montana.
Propelled by a natural sense of justice from one table to another.
Sang like a canary.
So waiters,
yes,
they sing sometimes, right? So
what times?
Probably about two times a shift.
So we never really came. We were trying to explore what a song was earlier.
Yeah. Okay. So say, do you remember Top Gear? You see Top Gear?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So you know when they're speaking, they say. A lot of things about a car, for
power.
Example.
That's one of the things.
Yeah, yeah, and they'll say about the wheels and about...
Horsepower.
Horses, yeah, yeah, of course.
I've crashed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Ow.
So they're speaking it. That's when the words come out in the same sort of... around the same pitch. Like I'm
right.
doing now.
Right, okay.
But if you sing, it's your variance of pitch. So it's like... Oh, oh, oh. Okay. So that's the song, just what I just said.
That was a song. and a waiter does that twice.
Waiters do that twice a shift. But so you,
are know, they are those are the songs produced at predetermined points in the shift, or
they're just the songs? They're ancient songs. But when they're, well, I mean they're
the ancient.
who governs when the ancient songs?
Well,
are
it's,
performed?
When I say ancient songs, what I mean is on the there's a board in the restaurant.
How
right?
do the police feel about this?
They don't mind because they're aware that it's happening.
Thank you.
Andy, would you like to sum up what we would mean if we said someone sang like a canary?
Well, presumably it means that somebody, I don't know whether it, you know, it's a mummy or a daddy or a Hammond, has at some point produced a song. A song is something which happens twice per the waiter's shift.
And it's when you speak and alter your pitch at the same time.
Yeah, you are conveying a sort of deep song of nature in some way.
An ancient song.
An ancient song, was it?
Thank you, Johnny.
And is that up to the waiter? Does the waiter decide, or is it nature?
Well, it's at their discrepancy, but their discrepancy is so often in tune with nature that it's one and the same.
Okay. Thanks.
Andy.
Yes.
At the end of this,
yes.
Who do you think has provided the most satisfactory explanation?
Well, it's a tough one. It's a tough one.
It's the only one we know.
Yeah, exactly. That's why it's so hard. It's the first time I've had to make this decision. And Johnny gave us a sense of scale.
Really useful.
Muddied the waters with a number of other explanations. Yes. But I do think that I can't remember exactly who gave us the fuller understanding of the sort of rutting up of jurisdictions between society and nature. But whoever it was who did that, I think, is the winner.
Do either of you two remember who did that?
No. I talked about nature, but I don't think I...
Established an oppositional
established
force.
Established it with the society.
Oh, I think I talked about nature and society, about whether you can eat sweets.
Yeah, sour and sweet and sour.
I mean, that was helpful.
To be honest, I thought that was my low point, but I'll take the win.
I would go for Johnny because at one point Heidi lied about whether or not Ash was alive.
Yep. Okay. That feels like it is again nature.
But I understand that you thought Heidi's was very useful.
No, I believe that nature abhors untruths.
Okay, so. we're saying that Johnny provided the most useful explanations.
The most truthful.
Johnny White, really, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much. A real pleasure.
And Heidi Regan, thank you very much.
Thank you to an extent.
I had a lovely time.
Oh, woo!
The police are interested in having no part in this.
Woo!
Kind of had it coming.
You have been listening to Born Yesterday, featuring Andy Barr and me, Alexander Bennett. I created the show and Steve Pretty composed the music. If you've enjoyed the show, please tell people about it. Follow us on social media and leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.